Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Go. Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
You do what's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our hosts, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gildo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Good evening and welcome to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gildo, Tiger Rag Editor, with Tiger Rag Executive Editor Todd Horn and our producer, Andre Champagne. Merry Christmas to everyone. Happy holidays. It's that time of year. This is the eve of Christmas Eve. Boy, as a kid, this was a tough day to get through, man. You couldn't wait for the next day. What was your favorite all-time Christmas present, Todd?
My favorite was a blue bike.
A blue bike?
That I got when I was 8 years old.
Awesome.
I begged for it, and I was told, like, you know, since Thanksgiving is when I started begging for it. And I was told by my parents and my grandparents that wasn't going to happen. You know, it just wasn't going to happen. And then on Christmas Eve, I can still see my grandfather in his green Chevy truck. He always had a Chevy truck, Super Chevy Studios. And it's true, but he really did. And he turns the corner, and you can see the bike in the bed.
Oh. You know,
and it was blue.
Nice.
And then I got on it. I was so excited. It was Christmas Eve, and it was almost dark, and I went for a ride. It was a 3-speed, and I went for a ride around the corner, and I was going fast, and I went through some gravel, and I just wiped out.
Oh, man.
Wiped out and hit my chin. Had to go to spend the night in the hospital.
Well, that's no problem. Did you scratch the bike?
Probably, but it wasn't bad, that, you know. But I had to spend the night in the hospital. Well, not the whole night, but I got stitches.
And, oh, well, that can be cool.
Had to breathe into the rubber glove. What was that about? Did you ever get stitches when you were a kid and have to breathe into the rubber glove?
No. You know, I never got stitches either. I guess I was much more well-coordinated and a better athlete
I'm sure that's what it was.
Andre, what was your favorite all-time Christmas present?
Well, I woke up one morning, and I remember there was just this big old basketball goal in my living room, and I was like, why is this huge thing there? But I mean, it was exciting because we got to put up that very day, and that's what I spent.
But it was an outdoor basketball goal that they just had in your house?
Right. But it wasn't set up. It was like all, like, it had the big box and stuff, you know, because it wasn't built yet. But
did that lead to like neighborhood one-on-one tournaments and stuff like that at your house?
No. But when the guys came over, yes. But because I live on a highway, there was no playing in the street, right? But it was fun. I mean, and y'all will be surprised because other people my age will say, oh, when I got my first phone or something. But no listeners, there's still hope out there.
So, well, my favorite was I got a complete football uniform, helmet, shoulder pads, the pants, the thigh pads. You remember those things?
Was it a Hutch uniform?
You know, I don't remember the brand name, but it was cool, man. I remember the shoulder pads were like white, real thick, and then the dude across the street from me, Dickie Lathrop, he got one too. You know, so we were out in the front yard all day, just hitting each other and stuff, man.
It was awesome. You evoked another memory. All right, so my mom, when I was about 8 years old, okay. She got me a full football uniform too.
Yeah.
And it was a Hutch uniform.
Okay.
And, you know, it was just a plastic helmet with.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah. It wasn't too safe.
So,
man.
So I decide I want to try out for the River Oaks Bengals football team, which was the first year that they were going to have the team. And,
in Baton Rouge.
Yeah. And at River Oaks Elementary. And I'm actually too young to go out for the team, but I was convinced I could go out there. Well, my mom dressed me in that helmet.
Yeah.
To go out there, and it would twist around. It was so big, and it was thin. It was plastic. And so she sent me out there with like 100 guys trying out for the team before they, you know, cut anything. And here I am with the coat. Can you believe she did that to me?
How did you do?
I ended up making the team.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because of my helmet. That's for damn sure.
Well, call in with your favorite Christmas present if you're out there listening to Tiger Egg Radio.
But I'm sure nobody's listening anymore.
But we are going to get back to some football. We're going to go over the Lane Kiffin hire, and actually LSU has a game on Saturday, and we're going to talk about that, even though it's the most least talked about, the least talked about and least anticipated bowl game I can remember.
Have you ever seen a bowl game that LSU's played in, honestly, that nobody cares about?
Well, you know, that bowl game after Kelly was hired, that was similar, but that was still kind of new, you know, whereas now people are used to these games not meaning a lot when there's a coaching change, and even sometimes when there's not a coaching change, and you know, the coach is not, the new coach not coaching it, because, you know, they used to do that. But we're going to talk about what the new LSU offensive coaches did last week, and that was coach at Ole Miss, where they were last season. Chris Lowe from on3.com covered that game in Oxford. We're going to talk to him about that and the playoff system, which took a hit this past week with particularly the James Madison game, and a lot of people don't think Tulane should have been there either. And then at 7 p.m., we have a great guest, Caroline Fenton from Yahoo.com and SiriusXM Radio. She talked football and the LSU women's basketball team as well. And then at 7:30, Toilo T.J. Brown, who covers the men's basketball team, who got the hell scared out of them last night by Prairie View before pulling it out. But we have Chris at 6:30, and right now we're going to continue to discuss the Lane Kiffin hire, and we have a great edition of the next Tiger Rag magazine coming out the first week of January with Lane on the cover, and it's basically the Lane Kiffin issue, and we had a lot of fun putting that together.
It's like a collector's edition,
man. Yeah, I think it is. It will be. Anyway, let's get it started with Todd's thoughts on Lane coming in.
Well, I think, you know, we call it, everybody calls it the Lane train, you know, the Lane train coming in, and it was filled with coaches from Ole Miss on his offensive staff. Well, yesterday, all the coaching staff, Lane's coaching staff, became final, and he named them all, and, you know, they were announced, I should say. And you've got to, you know, with all the energy and all of the excitement that he's brought to the LSU football program since he was announced and introduced as the head coach on December 1st. When you pair this coaching staff, which is so important to have a good coaching staff, it's one of the most important things a head coach does is build a coaching staff. And you pair that with what he did with the early signing period, which had screw up the terminology all the time, but it was the number one composite ranked class
per capita.
It was
the number one per capita because they only signed 14, but they're all really highly ranked. And based on just that 14 is the number one class.
Yeah, so if you took the average score,
yeah,
on an A to F scale, they were the highest ranked.
Right. Quality over quantity.
Quality over quantity. So you pair that with what he's done with his staff, and you can't help but be further excited, especially now that you know that this staff, along with Glasscock, who's his general manager, and I forgot his first name.
Billy
Glasscock. They have completely evaluated LSU's roster. They have their big board up. They know exactly who they want out of the portal. Now, we don't know who that is, but we know that they've got this. And they've completely built out who they want from LSU's pass roster, who they want to continue to recruit for the late signing period in February, and who they want out of the transfer portal. And they've got the staff. And this staff is impressive as heck.
Yeah, and you know, really what hurt Ed Orgeron in the end was his coaching hires. His assistant coaching hires really just killed him. And really Kelly, too. You know, the Joe Sloan hire ended up not being good. The Matt House hire looked good on paper when that happened, but he was a tremendous failure. Now he replaced him well with Blake Baker, but you know, he never did have a good offense after Jaden Daniels left and after Mike Denbrock left. And yeah, it's easy to coach a great quarterback like Bill Walsh did with Joe Montana and Denbrock with Jaden Daniels, but I would have liked to seen Denbrock or somebody like him with Nussmeier. So that really hurt him. So yeah, and Lane has a track record of hiring excellent assistants, particularly on the defensive side, because he kind of runs the offense. But he's picked some good ones on offense too. You know, the offensive coordinator,
Charlie Weiss Jr. Charlie
Weiss Jr. My mind went blank. You know, he's been under Kiffin since he was at Florida.
He actually worked with him at Alabama.
Oh, really?
When they were on Saban's staff at Alabama.
He was like a student assistant or a graduate assistant.
An analyst.
Yeah. So he's kind of built him, you know, and he's become a good coach. So, yeah, that's a good point. Well, let's go over the staff real quick. The special teams coordinator. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Special teams.
Special teams coordinator Joe Houston. He was like the most recent hire. That just happened yesterday. He was at Florida for a couple of years, coached at Alabama under Saban, also coached under Bill Belichick at New England. And then they got Sterling Lucas from South Carolina to be their defensive line coach, although he was more of an ends coach at South Carolina. So it's going to be interesting to see with what they do there, because they have Coach Peoples who is being retained, and he's kind of an edge coach. He has coached the defensive line in the past, so we'll see what happens there. And then Lane's little brother, Chris Kiffin, linebacker coach and co-defensive coordinator. He coached linebackers this past season at Ole Miss. The year before that, he was just an analyst. But he did coach the defensive line and linebackers at three NFL teams over 6 years. He was a defensive coordinator for Lane at Florida Atlantic as well. And, you know, they're retaining Corey Raymond and Jake Olson as well, in addition to Blake Baker. And then the other guys they brought in were the Ole Miss offensive assistants.
Well, wait, go back on defense real quick, because you mentioned Corey Raymond and Kevin Peoples and Jake Olson being retained, but he's also bringing in Lou Spanos.
Right.
And that was announced today, or yesterday, I should say.
Yesterday.
But it was one that kind of slid under the radar. He's an assistant defensive line pass rush specialist, and he's followed from Ole Miss, where he was a defensive analyst.
Well, he's been here though. He was grouped with the other guys when they came in on the 30th.
Well, he's got 17 years of NFL experience, and when you look at it, this is what's interesting. You've got Kevin Peoples, who's an edge rushers coach. You've got Lou Spanos, who is a pass rush specialist, and then you have, like you mentioned, with Sterling Lucas, who's probably going to bring Dylan Stewart from South Carolina in a transfer portal, is what I'm hearing. And Dylan Stewart was the best defensive end in the country this past year. So that defensive staff has been just enhanced. And as you mentioned, it was solid already. And then, of course, the offensive hires are primarily Ole Misses.
Right. And they just got Kevin Smith, who was rumored to be here early on, but he actually coached Ole Miss Saturday night and then was replaced by Frank Wilson last week, who's still going to coach LSU in the bowl. But Kevin Smith is in. There was some worry that he might not come in.
And in addition to being the running backs coach, Kevin Smith is also the associate head coach.
Right, and he's a big-time recruiter, and he may bring Kawan Lacey with him. That would be great, and especially if they get Trinidad Chambliss too. So that would be awesome. But we'll be back more to talk about the Lane Kiffin's new staff and more about Lane and the Tigers right after this on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious
with multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Merry Christmas to you. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor, with Tiger Rag Executive Editor Todd Horn, and our producer and writer and radio man, Andre Champagne, has breaking news.
So Todd just talked about it right before the break about Sterling Lucas, the new LSU defensive line coach coming from South Carolina. We weren't sure that Dylan Stewart, that star defensive end for South Carolina, was going to follow him, and he announced on social media about just 30 minutes ago that he will be staying at South Carolina with the Gamecocks next season. So
will Lucas still be coming?
Lucas will still be gone, yes.
But he didn't bring the guy he was supposed to.
Right, right.
But he's still going to stay. Okay.
Yes.
You know that's cool. You know what that means? That means they showed him the money at South Carolina.
That is there exactly what that there means. And it could be the same exact thing with Kewan Lacy, as there's been reports that they're offering him almost up to $2 million in NIL. So that's insane.
He'd be a great running back to get at LSU. If he came along with Kevin Smith, and you know, I mean, how you got to think LSU's got a great chance of getting him and Trinidad, if Trinidad Chambliss, the quarterback, gets the NCAA waiver, because I mean the whole offensive staff, like we said, Charlie Weiss, the offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach, Kevin Smith, the running backs coach, Joe Cox, tight ends coach and co-offensive coordinator, George McDonald, wide receivers coach, pass game coordinator. And this tells you a little bit about, Todd was just talking about this, how intricate their passing game can be. They also have an assistant, Sawyer Jordan, who just works with inside receivers. And then Dane Stevens is going to be the quarterback's coach along with Weiss. And, boy, that offense, I know it was against Tulane, but that offense really looked good on Saturday.
And the only person that we've left out is Eric Walford, who's the offensive line. He's the veteran. He's the actual SEC O-line coach hired from Kentucky.
Yeah.
That didn't give me the
– But he was at Alabama. He had some high rankings in the rushing offense at Alabama, and he's only been an offensive line coach his whole career, and he was at another Southeastern Conference play. So he's an SEC veteran. To me, that was one of the more impressive hires that he made. And you know Saban probably recommended him to Lane because of his time with Nick there. I bet you any money.
What do you think about all these co-offensive and co-defensive titles?
Now, a lot of that are just titles. Like somebody asked me, I was on a radio show last night, and they said, oh, well, do you think Blake Baker is going to be upset that Chris Kiffin is coming in as the co-defensive coordinator? No, it's just a title. There's always one guy who's the real coordinator, you know, because you can't have that many cooks in there. But it's like associate head coach. I mean, come on. Frank Wilson was not really having any head coaching duties while Kelly was the coach. Maybe he should have, but he became the interim. It's just a title for them to put on their resume and maybe get more money and then help them get future jobs, I think.
You know what it was? What's interesting, while you were saying that, I was thinking, okay, I'll buy that co-defensive and co-offensive coordinator thing. I agree with you. I'll buy that. But one of the things that I think is going to be really different for Blake Baker is he's not going to be coaching linebackers anymore. And he's always coached the linebackers.
I bet you still kind of got his hand in it, though.
No, I'm sure he does. He's
maybe
evolved.
That's a good thing, though. Maybe that's a good thing. He can focus more on the defense, you know.
Right. I think that's a good thing, too.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's the first time since he's been – he was at LSU before he left to go to Miami and then to Missouri, where he was the defensive coordinator, and then he comes back and he coached linebackers before he left LSU, and then when he came back, he's coached, and this will be the first time he's not coaching linebackers. I wonder if he'll still wear cleats to practice.
And I think he will, and he'll probably still wear that LSU baseball hat too.
Yeah, and that gold sweatshirt.
Well, I think you know, I think he's excited to keep Jake Olson and Corey Raymond and Peoples back. You know, so it's you know, there's really, when you look at it, I mean, they're all these guys, if they don't have experience in the SEC, they have experience in the NFL, and some of them both. You know, they're not getting some guys from lower level leagues. You know, they may have coached there early in their career, but these guys are very, very experienced. Looks like a very impressive staff.
And they all have ties to Kiffin.
Well, somewhat. I don't think Wallerford does, the offensive line coach. I know, he at Alabama? Well, maybe he was at Alabama.
I meant the offensive side, except for him. You're right.
Yeah. But, you know,
does Chris Kiffin have any ties to Lane Kiffin?
it's very connected. It's all very connected. But you know, it's gonna. I still think they need players, man. I mean, you know, he's really got to do a lot in the portal. But you know, I think after this year, because of LSU's recruiting base, I think he's gonna gradually be less and less portal oriented. Do you think that?
I think
numbers wise.
No, you know what I think? I think that it depends upon the year. And yeah, I think it depends upon how good the recruiting class is. I don't think he's going to get recruits just to get recruits and say he has a good recruiting class. I think they're going to evaluate that roster every year and build it the way they want to. And if they've got a great defensive lineman from Louisiana, a five-star like they had this year, and they want to bring him in and pay him the split of the salary, great. If not, they'll get one out of the portal. I think that's the mentality.
Okay, we will be back with Chris Lowe of On3.com right after this on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious. With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. While I'm a fourth generation rice and soybean grower, you don't have to be a farmer to be a Louisiana Farm Bureau member. Membership has its benefits, from discounts on car seats, hotel rooms, and rental cars, to access to insurance you can count on to be there when you need, plus a whole lot more. We're 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Happy holidays. Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor, with Todd Horn, Tiger Rag executive editor, and Andre Champagne, producer, versatile journalist of both electronic media and print media. And we're joined by another great journalist, Chris Lowe from On3.com. Chris was at the Ole Miss destruction of Tulane over the weekend with all those LSU coaches and maybe future LSU players. Chris, how are you? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you guys, Glenn. It's always good to be with you, buddy.
Thank you. And remember my address when you mail me those expensive cigars this Christmas. Appreciate it. I can almost smell them coming in. No Dutch Masters, no Swisher Sweets, no Have a Tampas.
Chris, I'm noticing a trend here. He keeps at reminding you about the cigars. He's reminding me about the whiskey constantly that he wants. I think he's telling us something about his lifestyle.
Yeah, he's been smoking cigars since he was 11. I think he's drinking whiskey since he was 13.
Hey, that reminds me. One of the greatest quotes ever by a football coach was by Curly Hallman, who was the LSU coach. And I forget the context of it, but one day he said, "I quit smoking when I was 7. Okay, Curly. Well, that's good, man. Made a health choice at 7. Curly Hallman, the man. Well, Chris, what did you think of that atmosphere in Oxford, man? It looked like something else on the television, man. What was it like being there?
Yeah, it was great, and I think it was one of those things that everything just sort of lined up. It's the first time they've ever played a playoff game there. It's a historic season for Ole Miss. They won more games than they've ever won. I think the whole thing with Kiffin, you know, bailing and not being there was a big part of it, because fans obviously want, hey, would they want to be there and say we won, you know, without Kiffin being here? And I think that was a big part of it. So a lot of pride there inside that Ole Miss program and fan base to be able to do this when, I mean, gosh, two of us have covered SEC football forever. If you'd have told me 10 years ago, 15 years, or heck, 20 years ago, that Ole Miss would win 12 games and then a playoff, I wouldn't have believed it. So it was cool. And it was one of those things where they started so fast, Glenn, that you knew pretty much, you know, after those first two drives that Tulane was going to have a hard time competing.
You know, and Ole Miss plays Georgia now in the second round quarterfinal at the Superdome in the Sugar Bowl. And Ole Miss was leading Georgia in the regular season going into the fourth quarter, and they got beat
at Georgia.
At Georgia, and got beat 16-0 in the fourth quarter. That was a weird thing. What do you think happened in that game, and what do you think are Ole Miss's chances in the Sugar Bowl?
Yeah, I was actually at that game too, and you know, Georgia did not punt, Glenn, a single time in that football game. They never punted. And it was like a hockey game, man. Both teams are up and down the field. And you're right, Ole Miss was able to match them score for score. And I would say
it was more like a basketball game than a hockey game.
Well, basketball, dude. Hockey. Okay. I'm thinking fast.
I know you're so Northeastern, but go ahead.
That's true. You're not educated enough to talk about hockey, but we'll save that for another day. But
nor am I interested enough, but go ahead.
But they just couldn't, you know, they could not get off the field. Ole Miss couldn't. And what happened is Georgia's defense was able to get some pressure on Chambliss in the fourth quarter and finally stopped him. And once they did that, Stetson Bennett, I'm still stuck a few years ago, Gunnar Stockton was able to really make a lot of big plays. Georgia ran the football better in the fourth quarter. But that was a close football game. And if Ole Miss could have made one stop, you just sort of, as that game sort of played out in the fourth quarter, you just felt like if they could have made one stop, that they had a chance to win that game. And granted, it was in Georgia. It was a tough environment, hostile environment. So I think, you know, beating a team twice, man, as you know, you go back through the annals of the SEC, it doesn't happen a whole lot. Yeah, when teams play twice.
You know, Chris, I agree that it's very difficult to beat a team twice, like you just said, and that it hasn't happened often in the SEC. But when I look at that game and I look what's happened since that game, I just think Georgia has significantly improved. And I think they're more like a typical Georgia team now, a Kirby Smart-coached Georgia team. And I think Ole Miss is going to have a little, you know, they're certainly not going to be able to run through Georgia like they did Tulane. And so I wonder if playing Tulane, a group of five team, in that first playoff kind of hurt their chances against Georgia a little bit. What do you think about that?
Well, I think Georgia's like to play. I mean, you want to get healthy, and Georgia's right, having the time off, you know, but you go back to last year, you know, Georgia beat Texas in a tough Sugar Bowl, won the SEC title, were off. And now there were some extenuating circumstances. Kirby's father fell there in New Orleans and later tragically died. And, you know, that was heavy on his mind. But Georgia didn't play well at all against Notre Dame. Scored 10 points and lost there after having the week off. So I think it can work both ways. To me, it all gets down to who does the best job of protecting the quarterback and who plays best up front in the offensive line. I think where Georgia, to your point, has improved the most is they played much better defense the last 3-4 weeks of the season. And you're right, have looked more like a Kirby Smart coached defense. They did not play very well most of this year on defense. They were erratic. They gave up big plays. And that's not what we're used to seeing from his defenses. But, yes, they've improved a lot. They've run the ball. I tell you what they've been is they've been balanced. on offense. Mike Bobo, to me, has been as underrated a coordinator as there is, with his ability to come in with Stockton in his first year as a starter. They've thrown the ball well. They've run the ball well. They've been a tough team, a much tougher team to defend. Ole Miss will have to play probably its best game to win. I'll say this. I don't think the kids on this team, though, are intimidated by Georgia, because think about it. A lot of the guys that were there last year when they beat Georgia by 3 touchdowns are still around. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Right.
And then this year, that game could have gone either way. It was up and down, back and forth. So I don't think they walk into this game in a neutral field, New Orleans, and think, we can't beat Georgia.
Well, and you know, Ole Miss is obviously a very mature team, especially in their attitude, especially having to endure everything they went through and with Kiffin's departure and when it occurred. But I was curious what your thoughts are on the fact that right after the first playoff win in Oxford against Tulane last week, their offensive staff is showing up, you know, as LSU's offensive staff, and they leave the team at Ole Miss and come back to Baton Rouge. How are they managing that, and what's the psychology behind all that?
Well, it can't be easy for the players. And I think, as we've all talked about this and reported on it and written stories, I think probably what gets lost is, how has this impacted the players? Because you know this is unlike anything they've ever been through before. The crazy thing is, the staff, you know, Lane had them back first thing the next morning, and they flew back the next day.
Yeah, and the players are probably off anyway, so I don't know how much it affects them.
Well, I think though it's more the emotional, the optics of it. You just win your first ever playoff game, and your coaches are gone, and you're back.
Right.
Hey, I give the players credit, though, guys. They played well, and they certainly did not look like a distracted football team.
Hey, Chris, we wanted to talk to you also about teams like James Madison and Tulane getting into the playoff, and if that should happen. Can you stay with us through the break and we can touch on that?
Yeah, just make sure I get the extra holiday pay, then I'll be glad.
Okay, and during the break, you can go through some cigar catalogs to pick out the best cigar for me. All right, we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio. And hey, you can listen to this Tiger Rag episode on your wherever you listen to podcasts. It'll be on shortly after the show ends on TigerRagRadio.com and on YouTube. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio and Chris Lowe from On3.com right after this.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Merry Christmas, everyone. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor, with Todd Horn, Tiger Rag Executive Editor, and Andre Champagne. What happened there?
My phone just started going off.
Okay. Super Chevy Dealer Studio, and we're rejoined by Chris Lowe from On3.com. Chris, let me read you some television ratings from the weekend. Alabama, Oklahoma, which was Friday night game, primetime, 14.9 million. Texas A&M, Miami, Saturday early afternoon game, 14.8 million. Ole Miss and Tulane in that 2:15 p.m. slot on Saturday dropped to 6.2 million. And Oregon and James Madison in primetime on Saturday night, 6.2 million. Do you think Tulane and James Madison should have been in the playoffs?
Under the current system, yeah. I mean, the system is what it is, and I think people, media, everybody has complained about it. But, you know, it's not Tulane's fault. It's not James Madison's fault.
But let me rephrase the question.
Well,
yeah.
I know you're right now. Yeah, but what needs to be changed is the system.
Glenn. Right,
And I do think we're going to expand the playoff at some point. I think we'll go to 16. There's too much money they're leaving on the table not to do that. So maybe there's a way to start the season earlier, or there's a play-in game. Maybe you have the top two ranked teams. Let's say you go to 16 teams, okay? You have the top two ranked group of five teams. Play some type of play-in game. You still have byes built in. But on that week, instead of getting a bye, they're playing in a play-in game. And the winner, so you're still involving two group of five teams, but only one of them gets in the playoffs. I mean, that doesn't bother me. The inclusivity piece of the playoff, I think, is what set people off. do we want to have the best 12 teams, or do we want to have the 12 teams that fit into the current system? So don't tell me, and I agree with you here, that it's the 12 best teams playing, because it's not. It's the 12 best teams that they can say, okay, this fits in what we have come up with a system to determine the national champion.
But Chris, I agree with what you're saying, but if it expands to 16, or if it stays at 12, but let's say it expands to 16, and you still make that play-in provision for a group of five team, what if that winner of that group of five play-in game still isn't one of the top 15 or 12 or 16 teams?
And I think there's a way to tweak it, I guess. I mean, that's why that, you know, Greg Sankey and all those folks make all the big money. Maybe you have a provision that says to be allowed to get in the playoffs, you have to finish in the top 12 of the rankings, or the top 15 of the playoff committee rankings. I don't know. I mean, I'm all for doing what we can to get the best teams in it. And our dear friend Glenn Roy Kramer, who we lost 2 or 3 weeks ago, used to always tell me, of course, Roy was the godfather of the BCS, the former SEC commissioner. And I remember talking to Roy a year or so ago at his home there at a retirement community and on the banks of the Tennessee River. And he was sort of chuckling and saying, well, they're still having a little controversy, aren't they, how they determine the national champion. He said, Chris, it's never going to be apples to apples in college football or oranges to oranges, because conferences are different. Schedules are different. Schedules even within the conference are different. I mean, think about it. Before Alabama and Georgia started playing in the SEC title game every year, they rarely met in the regular season. I don't think Georgia has ever played at Texas A&M. And A&M joined the conference in 2012. So it's just hard when you start comparing all these teams and schedules and conferences, everything's different. So I don't know what the perfect system is. But it certainly will be tweaked, just like it was tweaked last year. Right. I mean, last year you had that silly rule where the top four seeds were all the conference champions. They get away with that. I think we'll see something else done this year to figure out a way to get, whether it's expanding the playoff, to have a threshold where a group of five team has to finish ranked so high. But unless you're just going to go to a different division and create like a third division like you have FCS now, it's hard to explain to all the group of five teams, you're going to play all year long, but you're really not playing for anything. You're just going to play to get in bowl games. And I don't think that's really what anybody in college football necessarily wants.
Chris, when you look at the, speaking of schedules, you look at the SEC schedules and, you know, expanding to 9 games next year. Do you think that Lane has a chance with LSU's resources and his portal management can actually turn this LSU program into a playoff team in 1 year?
Yeah, I think it's going to be harder. It would be harder for anybody, not just Lane, because he comes in, as you point out, during a transitional time when it's just going to be harder, period, in the SEC to have a good team. You know, it's 8 more losses across the board. I was with Kirby Smart last week, and he was talking about it. He says, listen, he said, people are going to have to reprogram their minds in this league. Fans, donors, ADs, presidents. There are going to be a lot of good, really good 9-3 football teams walking around next year. And your question is, will the committee reward a 9-3 team? I don't know. But, no, I think Lane is a good enough evaluator of talent. I think he connects with the kids. I think they will mine that portal pretty hard. I do think they'll bring in players, probably from Ole Miss. And I think he's got a chance to turn it pretty quickly. But it's going to be harder playing 9 league games. It really will be.
Hey, Chris, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. And we'll see you at the Sugar Bowl. And have a Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you.
All right, you're buying dinner at Drago's.
Yes, yes. Tiger Rag will be buying dinner at Drago's. So actually, Todd Horn will be buying dinner at Drago's.
See you guys.
All right, bye. Thank you. All right, guys, you can listen to this whole episode on at the what am I trying to say, Todd?
Wherever you get your podcast.
Wherever you get your podcast.
They're on any platform. They're also going to be available on YouTube.
And shortly after the show, they'll be available on the TigerRag.com website. More after this.
I'm Richard Funtno, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation.
For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio Christmas Edition. Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor, here with Todd Horn, Executive Editor, and Andre Champagne, our producer, writer, and radio man on Louisiana Network.
Jack of all trades.
Yes, yes. And you can want to thank Chris Loeb for joining us for two segments there. I always enjoy Chris, his knowledge of the SEC. And you can listen to the whole show on Tiger Rag website right after the show, or at your favorite place to get podcasts on YouTube. You can listen to the whole show. We're going to have Caroline Fenton coming up at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock. She's from Yahoo and Sirius XM Radio. We're going to talk about Lane Kiffin, women's basketball, Brian Kelly. And she's going to have a special Christmas gift for you listeners. But interesting news over the weekend with Joe Burrow having a heck of a game against Miami, the former LSU Heisman Trophy and national champion quarterback, after kind of talking about how he his will to play and desire to play among so many injuries. But, boy, he really went out and turned it on. And Todd Horn had a great story that's coming out in the next Tiger Rag magazine, and it's on our website, comparing Joe Burrow's career arc and injury situations with Burr Jones.
It's pretty amazing how eerily similar that career arc is. And I don't want to spoil it for you. You can go to TigerRag.com and just do a search on Joe Burrow if it's still not on the homepage. Or like Glenn said, you can catch Tiger Rag Magazine when it comes out the first part of January. It's in there too, but it's eerily similar. I mean, the same trajectory across the board.
Yeah, well, Burt Jones never made a Super Bowl, but he got close a couple of times, had some great statistical seasons, MVP seasons, and Joe Burrow made a Super Bowl, didn't win it, and has had great statistical years. And just, you know, at times, Burt Jones was the best quarterback in the NFL throughout much of his career, and Joe Burrow, same thing.
You know, it's interesting, too. Burrow rebounded his worst game of his career a week ago against the Ravens, lost 24-0. It's the only time he's been shut out in his pro career. And afterwards, he continued that almost sounded like a eulogy on his career. He really worried about his mental capabilities. And then he responds this week at Miami with a tremendous game. And I think Cincinnati won 45-20. They blew him out. And, of course, it was a typical Joe Burrow game where he threw like three touchdown passes, passed for 300-something yards, had like a 70% completion rate. But he also became the fifth fastest quarterback in NFL history to surpass the 20,000-yard passing mark.
He looked like Dan Marino in that game.
And you know what he said? You know what he said after the game? They asked him about the 20,000, and he goes, "Yeah, well, if I wouldn't have been hurt so much and been out, I'd have hit, have a lot more than that right now."
Yeah, you could see his frustration in that interview, but he definitely shows he can still do it. And you know, I think what Joe Burrow needs is a new team. I mean, nothing against Cincinnati, but just a change of scenery can really turn around a player's career. You know, you see it happen in Major League Baseball, the NBA, and maybe that'll happen for Joe. I'd like to see him playing for the Saints, but I don't know if that's going to happen. Actually, Tyler Shaw is playing really well.
Shuck. His name is Shuck.
Yeah, that's what I said.
You said Shuck.
Well, no, the radio went off.
Oh.
All right, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Caroline Fenton from Yahoo Sports and Sirius XM Radio. Remember, you can listen to this whole show wherever you listen to podcasts, on YouTube or right after the show on TigerRag.com. Here live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
We do what's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio in this Christmas edition. We're heading up the second hour, and let's go right to Caroline Fenton of Yahoo Sports and Sirius XM Radio.
Okay, Luke, so now, you know, you get, this is your, as you've been producer now for over a month of Tiger Rag Radio, you get your first experience of the Caroline Fenton experience. And this is going to be something for you to remember, okay? Because she is not only really smart and really on top of what's going on at LSU and in the SEC and actually the nation as a whole, but she's really good at what she does. So, Caroline, are you there?
I am here. I appreciate that you're setting the bar probably way too high than I deserve, but I appreciate all of your kind words.
Well,
I've told people, whenever I meet new people, welcome to the Caroline Fenton experience. I will adopt that.
Well, there you go.
If you don't mind, I'll give you credit.
Well, good. Do that. I look forward to hearing that credit. I thrive on credit. So,
don't we all?
So, speaking of the experiences and raising the bar, there's a gentleman named Lane Kiffin who has really excited and energized LSU football, and God knows it needed some energizing after its last experience, if you will. But what have you thought about how Lane Kiffin has just really bulleted in here on his train and what he's done in his first 30 days, actually, still within that first 30 days?
Yes, a gentleman named Lane Kiffin. I think I've heard of him. I have been blown away. And look, it was a slam dunk home run hire when they made it. There was no better coach on the market. Any coach that would have been a better hire than Lane Kiffin wasn't going to leave their respective place, right? Dan Lanning wasn't leaving Oregon. Marcus Freeman wasn't leaving Notre Dame. So if any coach that was potentially out there in the market, Lane Kiffin was the coach, and LSU got him. So home run A-plus hire right now. Now, how will we feel about that hire in a year from now, 3 years from now, 10 years from now? Time will tell how good of a hire this actually is. But right now, so far, so good. You look at the way that he's embraced the culture of LSU football. He's incredibly active on Twitter, but a lot of his tweets have been, you know, the mecca of college football, the cathedral of college football. There's no better place than this. I think that was one reason why a lot of LSU fans had such a bad taste in their mouth about Brian Kelly. It wasn't just the fact that he wasn't from Louisiana or didn't have experience in the SEC. I don't think that's a prerequisite for being successful at LSU, but his issue was he wasn't embracing what makes LSU football different and special, what makes it one of the best jobs in the country. So I think first and foremost, just the foundation and basis of Lane Kiffin being excited about this job, being at LSU, enjoying everything that's afforded to you in one of the greatest jobs in the country, I think has been incredibly impressive. Then you also look at the staff that he's assembling with Kevin Smith, one of the most highly regarded running back coaches in the country. Of course, that means Frank Wilson is out the door, and I do think that could potentially rear its ugly head in terms of recruiting in New Orleans, but you do bring in Kevin Smith, a guy that has a very strong relationship with Kawan Lingsey, a guy that's building a strong relationship with Harlan Berry and Caden Durham. You see that he's bringing in Sterling Lucas, the defense bends coach from South Carolina. Could that potentially mean that Dylan Stewart, one of the best defensive players in the SEC, is headed to LSU? It very well could be. You're looking at the staff that he's assembling. You're looking at the culture that he is rebuilding. You're looking at the excitement throughout the entire fan base. So far, the first 30 days, it's early. He's still got a whole lot of games to win, and he still has a lot to prove, not just at LSU, but as a coach as a whole, winning the big games, getting to the college football playoff, winning a national championship. He still has a lot left to prove. But in this first 30 days, I don't know how it could be better.
Well, Caroline, let's extend it to this first year, 2026. I mean, obviously, all the things that you said about what Lane Kiffin, who Lane Kiffin is, and what he's been able to accomplish in his first within his first 30 days here at LSU are great. But you know, is he going to be able to, in your opinion, win in his first year? Because we all know that that he doesn't have 4 years to build a program the way coaches did traditionally up until 4 or 5 years ago. He's got to turn it around quick. Can he do that?
Nobody has 4 years anymore. That's not just a specific to Lane Kiffin and LSU thing. Can he win in his first year? I think if you're expecting national championship or bust in year one, you're going to be disappointed. It's going to be hard for Lane Kiffin or any first-year head coach to win a national championship. But look what Chris Cignetti has done in 2 years at Indiana. Like, that's the new bar. So I do think that Lane Kiffin can be successful in year one at LSU. And one big reason for that is because Lane Kiffin has a wonderful track record of recruiting through the portal. How do you microwave success? How do you have success overnight in today's college football? It's utilizing the transfer portal and not just getting in big names, but finding the right guys that fit your scheme, fit your program, guys that are going to be unselfish, not worried about the amount of money that's being thrown around in NIL. You look at Ole Miss in 2024, at the number one transfer portal class in the country. That didn't turn into a college football playoff bid, which was a disappointment in Oxford, Mississippi, no doubt. And I think that should be a reason for skepticism about Lane Kiffin. What's his ceiling? Can he continue to win the big games? So you can win, you can go 10-2, win 10, 11 games every single season, but if you're not winning a national championship, you're not being successful at LSU. So that's still what Lane Kiffin has to prove. But you look at LSU's schedule, it's not easy. Like, there's not very many gimmies on the schedule when you open up the season with Clemson, when you go to Oxford, Mississippi. You have Texas A&M. You have Alabama, Texas, at Tennessee. Those are not easy games, and those are not easy places to play. So I think that there needs to be a little bit of grace there, a little bit of a feeling out period there whenever you don't have, you know, one of those easy cupcake games week one to kind of figure things out. But with Lane Kiffin's track record in the transfer portal and with the amount of players, amount of buzz that has kind of been surrounding a lot of players at Ole Miss that could potentially enter the transfer portal and follow Lane Kiffin to LSU, you are going to get guys with experience, and you're going to get guys with a pre-existing relationship with Lane Kiffin and a coach that knows how to use them. So I wouldn't expect a national championship. Let's pump the brakes on that. But can Lane Kiffin go 10-2 and go to the college football playoff in year one with LSU's resources? I say, why not?
Well, when the transfer portal opens on January 2nd, you know, you mentioned Kiffin's success as being the guru of the transfer portal. What do you think are the most important positions that he has to succeed in that transfer portal this year to help LSU achieve a college football playoff?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it starts in the offensive line. You know, protection was such a huge problem this past year. I don't think that Garrett Nussmeier's regression year over year was due to Garrett Nussmeier forgetting how to play football all of a sudden. I don't think that LSU's difficulty running the football came from having a lack of talent at that position. We've seen Harlan Berry. We've seen Caden Durham. We know how much talent they had at those positions. Your offensive line is the backbone of everything that you want to do offensively. So I think that's one, should be one priority in the transfer portal, is finding size and finding experience. That's a position that's really difficult to find, though, in the transfer portal. Guys that have experience, especially having high-level experience either in the Big Ten or the SEC, those are guys that don't transfer very often. More often, you see offensive linemen in the portal because they don't get opportunities at their starting spot. So I think that should be priority number one. I also think bolstering up the defensive line. Bolstering up both lines of scrimmage in general. That's how you win and lose football games in the SEC. So with the lack of talent that LSU had this past year, or the talent they have leaving for the NFL draft, or, you know, into the transfer portal, or just lack, you know, running out of eligibility, I think the lines of scrimmage should be the first priority for Lane Kiffin.
But you mentioned earlier the September 19th game at Ole Miss. You know, the LSU Ole Miss.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, the LSU Ole Miss rivalry has really been somewhat lacking over the last, I don't know, 10 or 12 years, if not more. Do you think those days are over and it's back to the most rabid rivalry in the conference now?
Oh, I think it's back to maybe being one of the most rabid rivalries in sports, period. I mean, it's, of course, you have the LSU-Ole Miss rivalry, but like you said, for so many years, it was dominated by LSU. It didn't feel like much of a rivalry. And then in the Lane Kiffin years, the game went back and forth. Really, LSU wins one, LSU loses one, so on and so forth. So that kind of reignited the rivalry, the fact that it was a competitive game year over year. And then now, I mean, you have the Ole Miss coach leaving before the college football playoff to go to LSU. I mean, one of the juiciest rivalries that you could ever dream of. So I will be in the house in Oxford, Mississippi for that game because I would not miss it for anything. And I know that every grocery store in Oxford, Mississippi is going to be stocked up with plenty of bottles of French's mustard ready to hurl it at Lane Kiffin's head whenever they get the opportunity.
Do you believe that Trinidad Chambliss, if he gets his additional year of eligibility that he's applied for, and that Kewan Lacy, the, you know, Ole Miss running back, do you think they will follow Lane Kiffin and his staff to LSU, offensive staff to LSU?
I do think Trinidad Chambliss will. And, of course, like you said, it's all dependent on that NCAA waiver. I do think Trinidad Chambliss will, because why do we know who Trinidad Chambliss is? Going from a D2 guy that nobody had ever heard of to now being a household name in college football was because of Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss Jr. So I do think there's a good chance that Trinidad Chambliss ends up at LSU, and that's a position that's wide open at LSU. It's not a position that he's going to have to compete for in camp. Now, Kewan Lacy is the interesting one. I would not be surprised to see Kewan Lacy stay at Ole Miss. It's been reported that he had an NIL deal of around $2 million to stay in Oxford, Mississippi. So is LSU going to be willing to surpass that, give him a $2 million NIL deal plus? Well, how do you justify that with Harlan Berry and Caden Durham? And maybe that's not Lane Kiffin's priority. Maybe his priority is Kewan Lacy over those running backs that are already in the running back room. I think it'd be a really hard sell to tell guys that were committed to LSU, guys that have been at LSU, to say, hey, we're going to spend $2 million on this running back, and you're now going to have to compete for this job, and you're going to be getting paid significantly less. That's, I think, a little bit of a sticky situation. I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world if LSU missed out on Kewan Lacy, but obviously that's Lane Kiffin's guy. You know, if you watch Lane Kiffin's interview on the Pat McAfee show, he brought in Kewan Lacy and bragged on him how much he admired him as a player and as a person and as a student. So maybe that's Lane Kiffin's priority over keeping guys that are currently in LSU's locker room. So I would feel better about the path for Trinidad Chambliss coming to LSU more than I would about Kewan Lacy, because that is a crowded running back room already.
Caroline, we've got less than 2 minutes in this segment, but we've got to take a break after that, and I'd like to bring you back for a special segment, if you will, after our commercial break. But let's switch gears to women's basketball, because I know you're a big follower of women's basketball on the national scale and, of course, of LSU. My big question is, LSU looks awesome right now, and they're ranked in the top five. The net has had them as high as number one this year. I don't believe they're there right now. But is LSU for real, or are they just a product right now, of course, unbeaten and scoring points like they're going out of style? But is that just because of who they're playing, and will they be able to compete in the SEC, and will they be able to compete on the national level?
It's a great question, and one that I actually just talked about. I host a women's basketball podcast in Yahoo Sports called Hoops 360. We did a segment of Are You What Your Record Says You Are? Because early in the season, before we get to conference play, sometimes your record can be a fallacy. And so we kind of deep dove into, okay, are teams that aren't in the top 25 or maybe below 500, are they not a very good basketball team, or are they just playing a really difficult schedule? I look at Duke, for example, a team that's underachieved based off of expectation, but you know, has been playing a really difficult schedule. LSU is what their record says they are. They destroyed Duke, a team that is very good and can be a national championship contender.
We lost her.
She's still on air here. Caroline, you still there? Might have lost her here, but we're going to take a short break here on Tiger Rag Radio, and we're going to bring Caroline right back here at the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability.
Nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Tiger Rag Radio is back, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
We're back here on Tiger Rag Radio at the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, and luckily we have Caroline Fenton back. We lost you for a second. It was a technical difficulty, and it was, of course, our error. We apologize, Caroline. Thanks for sticking with us. I was kind of afraid you might have gone Christmas shopping and left us at the altar, but it appears it was all our fault. So I'm glad you're back.
I would never leave you at the altar. And trust me, shopping on December 23rd sounds like my own personal form of a nightmare, my own personal hell. I am the kind of Christmas shopper. I get it all done online. Early December, late November, love a Black Friday deal. I'll even shop throughout the year. I'll pick up some Christmas goodies in July and August just to get it done so I can just enjoy the holiday season and have all of my shopping over with. So I'm not a December 23rd or 24th shopper.
Well, that's good because it sounds like you're very organized and you plan things.
I don't know about that.
Well, it sounds like you plan.
I'm just an impulse buyer.
Yeah, but you plan things out. You know what you want to buy for whom and when and why. Am I right? I mean, and that's what you pretty much just described there to me.
Oh, yeah. I love to give gifts. That is a personal form of a love language. Is giving gifts, giving thoughtful gifts, giving gifts that I know people will want to use. So I definitely like to think about it throughout the year to make sure I'm, jerk a few tears on Christmas morning or make people jump up and down excited about the gift that they're going to get on Christmas morning. So it's definitely one of my favorite times of year, no doubt.
You make it sound so exciting. And it's like the real spirit of the holiday and what Christmas is supposed to be about. So with that said, pretend like you are here in Baton Rouge.
Okay.
Christmas Eve, and there's a gathering at, let's say, the South Stadium Club. And it's filled with personalities and coaches and administrators from LSU. And, of course, since you're so prepared, you've put your gifts together for them. But I'm sure before you did that, you sort of segmented them into a naughty list or a nice list. Who might be on your naughty list from LSU this year?
Ooh, that's a great question. I love this. Naughty list. I'll start with Matt McMahon. We need Matt McMahon to start proving a little bit more. We need Matt McMahon to maybe put this money where his mouth is a little bit. So what I'm going to do for Matt McMahon this year, if I could give it, I absolutely would. Obviously, I can't. But I would give a bid to the NCAA tournament. NCAA tournament berth for Matt McMahon, because I think that is what is going to save his job. That's what I think the bare minimum for Matt McMahon and the LSU men's basketball program is this year. So he's on my naughty list until he's not. You can prove yourself, you can prove me wrong and take yourself off of the naughty list whenever you take care of business. I will give Matt McMahon a berth to the NCAA tournament.
Well, he will love you for that. He will love you for that.
I know he would. Wouldn't they all?
Yeah. Is there anyone else on your naughty list? Like maybe, Brian Kelly? I doubt he would be there, but perhaps he would be for some reason.
Make the list because he's not invited. He's not coming to my Christmas party. He's not invited to Christmas morning. He can be with his family.
His family. Okay. All right. Well, who's on your nice list?
I'll add Kenzel Kelly to the naughty list as well for his senior night antics.
That was horrible, wasn't it? I just thought that
was
a very
so cringe. Okay. It was so bad.
Okay, so they're out. They're not going to be invited. It sounds like you don't have anybody else on your naughty list.
It's a short naughty list this year. Ryan Kelly is if he does have to be invited. If I do have to get him a gift. Let's see, I maybe just get him a nice cup of New England clam chowder, you know, or maybe even perhaps a Michigan t-shirt. Maybe that's where he's headed.
Yeah, I think that's what we all hope.
Ann Arbor.
I think that's all what we hope is happening for Mr. Brian Kelly, that he is headed to
Sharon Michigan. Moore would be on my naughty list as well. Obviously no LSU ties, but he's on my and maybe very many other naughty lists.
All right, nice list. Really quick, we're running out of time. So nice list. And gifts.
Jay Johnson's at the top of the nice list. And what Jay Johnson gets from me for Christmas is a trophy case. He's going to need a much, much bigger one. He's absolutely at the top of the nice list, fresh off of a national championship game. Lane Kiffin's on the nice list, but he hasn't done anything to be off the nice list. He could be on the naughty list. We will follow up with this next year, depending on how year one goes. But Link Kiffin, home run higher, nice list. And Kim Mulkey as well, like we talked about in the last segment. She's got that team rolling, and I'm ready to see what they look like in conference play once they get some tougher opponents on their schedule.
Okay, I doubt Angel Reese would be at this year's party because she's going to be busy preparing for the WNBA season. But would she be on your naughty nice list?
She is on my nice list. I know she's on a lot of people's naughty list, but I love Angel Reese. I love the kind of drama and intrigue that she's brought to the WNBA. And she's been a great proponent for women's basketball. She is at the top of my nice list, right next to Kim Mulkey. They both get sparkly sweaters for Christmas.
Well, I hope you have a great Christmas, you and your family, and we look forward to talking to you very soon into the new year. And let's see how Lane Kiffin does in the portal, and we'll get back with you and see how he's progressing.
Hey, that might as well be his name as Lane Portal, but thank you all so much. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy new year to all of you. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Caroline.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio Christmas edition. I want to thank Caroline Fenton for a great guest appearance with Todd Horn there. Interesting naughty and nice list there.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah, the main person on her naughty list was Matt McMahon.
Well, she put a little pressure on Matt. I'm sure Matt understands that. So far, so good. But it got scary last night against Prairie View. LSU was down at halftime and came back and won 104-90, but their defense did not play very well. We're now joined by Toy Lawyer T.J. Brown, covers LSU basketball and Southern football for the Baton Rouge Advocate. T.J., Merry Christmas to you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you guys as well. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Hey, were you thinking there as the second half started that LSU might lose that game last night?
Yeah, I read my story during the game, my game story, so I have to have like a winning version as well as a losing version if it gets a little bit dicey, and I had a losing version prepared for it. I had some concerns that they was going to have a big upset here, which would have been I don't want to say disaster. That might be a little harsh, but it would have been very, very bad if that's a step under disaster, at least in the non-con. And, yeah, no, it was worrisome. The three-point shooting, all props to Prairie View. They went 10 of 13 from the three-point line, which is hard to do if you're wide open in a gym by yourself amongst, like, your team. So to do that in a real game action, highly impressive shot-making. But, yeah, no, LSU, they probably shouldn't be down as many as 10 points to a team like Prairie View when your SEC schedule kicks off in January.
So, Torlo, this is Todd. This is Todd. To your point about Prairie View and LSU shouldn't be down to them, and I know they were hot, and Matt gave them a lot of credit, or all the credit, for shooting the way they did and talking about how it was going to make NBA clips, scouting clips for them all, and, you know, be a highlight reel for the ages. But how responsible is LSU's defense, or lack thereof, for allowing that to happen?
Yeah, no, it's definitely twofold. You can give credit to the opposing team. They have to make the shots. But also, as a higher-level program with talent, with size, with experience, you should be able to have the personnel to make a team that's at a mid-major not go off from three so much so you're down at halftime and down as many as 10. So I think LSU's defense definitely has to improve, because it's not the first time where a team got red hot from three. The last time that it truly happened was against Texas Tech, which obviously is a ranked team where that's a bit more understandable how that can be difficult. And that was like the fifth game away from home in a row. So there's some stuff there. But the defense definitely has to improve, especially in the perimeter. It's no mistake that LSU has a lot more size, especially on the interior. They play a 6'10 center that's 260, a 6'9 small forward, a really active 6'7 power forward. They have another 6'10 big man off the bench in Robert Miller. So they definitely have the size taken care of in the interior, but on the perimeter, we have our point guard, or LSU has their point guard in DJ Thomas, and their two guard in 6'6", Max McKinnon, who has size but isn't as athletic. So with players that are either not as athletic or smaller, in the case of DJ Thomas, who's 6'1", you may have issues on that front when it comes to guarding really closely on the perimeter. So it's a mixture of personnel as well as just the scheme that LSU's defense is very switch-heavy, and it's not one that's going to hedge on ball screens. They're not going to put a lot of on-ball pressure on ball handlers because they want to ensure that, okay, we'll let you dribble by us, and we have our big men up to, in, at the rim to protect the rim. So maybe they need to adjust a little bit of the scheme as well as maybe push players to be a bit more assertive in terms of pressuring on the ball.
So what's your overall impression? They only have one more pre-SEC game, and that's against Southern Miss, who's not been playing badly. They almost beat South Carolina the other night. I think they were up by 10 at one point, and then they went into overtime and lost at South Carolina. And then I think they almost beat Ole Miss, and I think it was on a neutral court. So they're obviously not a bad team, but does LSU have time to correct their defense before they get to the SEC? And will that Southern Miss game be helpful in doing that?
Yeah, no, I think the Southern Miss game, that's what you want to do. You want to obviously get the W, get the win like they did against Prairie View, but you also want to either experiment or do things that help you down the line. And the big thing that they want to improve on is that perimeter defense. So that looks like the biggest weakness, at least team-wide, that they have. Southern Miss is more talented. I'm not an expert on their team. I haven't done my full deep dive, but they're more talented, it looks like, based off the analytics and how they played against tough teams. They're more talented than Prairie View. So LSU, they can't overlook them. I don't think they would, especially after the game they had yesterday against Prairie View. And I wouldn't be surprised, because McMahon, he's a coach that is very willing to ride with whoever's producing. If you're not making mistakes and you're impacting the game, he's going to let you have more minutes than you would normally if you're coming off the bench. The last game, it was the backup point guard and Jalen Reese, as well as Rashad King. Those two backup guards were getting increased minutes. Jalen Reese, the backup point guard, played with DJ, and both of them are both 6 feet tall, about. And yeah, it worked out because Jalen Reese just was a bit better on defense than it was for the other options that, that McMahon was playing. The same with Rashad King. I think he had three blocks, and he's a 6'6" guard / wing. So I think that's another deal that you should look out for against Southern Miss is just who he runs with that's given the results on offense as well as defense.
Are we putting a little bit too much lipstick on a pig, or is this LSU team actually, I mean, right now, if you look at, if there was an NCAA tournament selection right now, based on where LSU's ranked in the net, I think 34th today, they would be in the tournament.
41 right now. But.
Or 41. Okay. So they would still probably be in the tournament at 41 with a net ranking of 41. But let's say that they do beat Southern Miss. They'll go into the SEC at 12-1. Do they have what it takes to pull off 8, 9, 10 wins in the SEC this year and compete for a tournament?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. That's the question that everyone cares about because the SEC conference play is when stuff gets actually real and we see what type of team this team is. And I'm not going to lie, though, non-conference was one of the weaker ones amongst the conference opponents that they'll face. They had really two major challenges. One was Texas Tech, where they lost by 24. The other, right afterwards, was SMU, where they won by 12. That was a semi-home game in New Orleans at the Smoothie King Center. So this was not a very competitive schedule in comparison to, like, the Alabamas, who plays, like, the most competitive, and Florida, and Kentucky plays competitive schedules. Even not that Vanderbilt played a super competitive schedule, but I think Vanderbilt played at least four power conference teams where LSU really played two, plus DePaul, who's in the Big East. So to answer your question, I think this team is better when you have a point guard, which LSU does, and you have a lot of, I guess, the bigs to get rebounds, to be reliable, not just one, but you have really 3 to 4. You always have a chance to win, and I think this team has way better chances of winning close games and keeping games close, honestly, compared to last year where they didn't have great point guard play and they lacked the size to get rebounds. And those two things are actually strengths. I'm not going to say they're an excellent rebounding team, but they're not going to get destroyed on the glass. They'll also battle back and get offensive rebounds themselves and get defensive boards. And the point guard play, that's their best player, in my opinion, in Dedeon Thomas, where he's leading SEC in assists. I think at 6.7, he's getting about 16 points per game. His three-point shot is the only weakness right now. It's really bad. I think it's sub 30%, which he hopes does go up, because if he's not able to be a quality shooter, then defenders will go under on ball screens.
Okay.
But besides that, he's great.
Thanks, TJ. Thanks for joining us. Happy holidays to you.
Yeah, no, for sure. Thank you very much, and have a Merry Christmas.
All right, we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio, coming down the home stretch here on this Christmas edition. Yeah, Todd and I were just talking. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor with Todd Horn, executive editor, and Andre Champagne, our producer, writer, broadcaster. Andre Luke Champagne. Talking to TJ Toyloy Brown from The Advocate. The net of LSU is 41 after that win because Prairie View's net was 290. and their record is 5-7, but the NCAA sees them as 1-7 because four of those wins were not against real teams, I guess.
They were more like club teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Playing those games almost hurts you more than
they do. It really does. It does. They need to put that behind them, and Southern Miss is probably going to be much better. But if they can get that win, they'll be 12-1. Going into the SEC, then if they can just go 8-10, they should be right there because they'll have 20 wins. And if they win 8 SEC games, that's going to be a handful of quad one wins, if not more.
Yeah. Let's see, and that's the other, you know, we had Matt on last week, and the fact that the SEC is not as dominant as they were last year across the board, they are down a little bit, even though he didn't want to say that and almost refuted it. But he did admit there's nowhere to go after last year other than down. But the point is there's going to be less quad one games available because the bottom of the SEC will not be quad one if the trend continues like it is. So it's going to be a little bit tougher to make for an SEC team to make the NCAA tournament this year than it was last year.
Yeah, yeah, but it's going to be he's going to have a less chance of a lot of losses too.
Yeah, and that's because the team,
also like last year's team would probably have won maybe six games against this SEC, maybe.
Right.
You know, so you'd hope that this team could win eight or nine.
Well, and I think, you know, I mean, I don't want to get too excited here, but if they learn how to play good defense, they have as Toiloy TJ was saying, they have the interior size and skill set to be able to not get blown out and overpowered. There were so many games last year where they were in it, and then all of a sudden there was a stretch where they just got blown out because they were overpowered and out-physicaled. This LSU team is not going to be out-physicaled every night.
Yeah, and I think they got caught kind of playing lackadaisical defense against Prairie View. And you know, they knew they had a big Christmas break coming. But, you know, the early days of the SEC schedule is going to be very key. They open up Saturday, January 3rd at Texas A&M. Then they got South Carolina at home, you know, the worst team in the SEC last year. And they play South Carolina twice this year, you know, and they start off with more home games than road. So they're going to have a chance right off to kind of get above 500 in the SEC, which they never were last year.
And actually, I watched Texas A&M play SMU before LSU played SMU. And Texas A&M is not Texas A&M of last year. They're not that as good of a team as they were last year. And I think LSU matches up really well. Now, the fact that it's a road game obviously bodes in favor of A&M. But I think LSU can overcome. So to your point, while we were at break, if they can start out 2-0 with a win over Texas A&M and a win over South Carolina, then that would really help this team, boost this team as it moves forward.
Yeah, what I like about this team is they got a little bit of everything. You know, they got a great point guard or a very good point guard in DJ Thomas. And Max McKinnon is kind of an outside shooting specialist who can also rebound a little bit. Then you got Mike Nwoko, who's really playing much better at LSU than he did at Mississippi State. He's really a power force inside.
Offensively as well as rebound.
And can shoot with either hand. And then Markell Sutton is a guy who can shoot the three, shoot from the outside, and yet he also rebounds really well. He's a versatile guy, you know. So
what do you think of Tomahawk?
And then Tomahawk, you know, I didn't think he was going to be as good as he is.
Okay, that's not really his name. It's Pablo.
Pablo Tomba. And he has a nice little Tomahawk move, and he's a good rebounder, and he's good in transition. He can jump. You know, they got a lot of guys they can throw at you. So I think they're going to be able to win. Eight games, maybe nine. If they could win nine games, that would really be great for
You're
them.
You're talking about SEC games.
SEC games, yeah. That would be in good shape. It'd be fun to see them in the NCAA tournament. But we'll be back to wrap it up here on Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio Christmas Edition with Glenn Gilbo here, Tiger Rag Editor, and Todd Horn, Executive Editor, and Andre Champagne, who is a radio broadcaster, a writer, and a producer, multiple great LSU graduate from the Manship School of journalism.
As am I.
As are you, Todd Horn.
As you are not.
As I am not. I went to Missouri. I wanted to expand my horizons. But I know a lot of people that went to LSU at that time. Great journalism school.
Yes, thank you very much.
And here we are live at the Super Chevy Dealer Studio wrapping up the show. And if you want to listen to this show in its entirety, you can listen to the podcast at your favorite place to listen to podcasts or YouTube. And shortly after the show ends, it will be on TigerRag.com.
It's actually going to be about an hour and a half after tonight.
Later tonight and early in the morning, you can get it on TigerRag.com. But I want to thank Chris Lowe for joining us and T.J. Toilo Brown for joining us about basketball and Caroline Fenton, who had some interesting things to say about her Christmas party. She's not inviting Brian Kelly. Were you surprised by that?
It's a fictitious Christmas party, and I think part of the reason, you know, vitriol. I sense some vitriol there. The reason is because LSU's having to play in the Texas Bowl this year when it was, you know, he's got the receipts for the national championship.
Which, that's right. Yeah. What happened to that? He's at the third tier Texas Bowl. That is 8:15 p.m. Saturday on ESPN. LSU plays number 21 Houston, which is 9-3. LSU finished 7-5 with an offense that, according to a Twitter account, Lane Kiffin was watching the season finale between LSU and Oklahoma and said, "Who did this game plan?" Which is what LSU fans have been saying for most of the season. So we'll see how the new game plans come out next season. But I was just telling you guys earlier, this is the least anticipated, least talked about bowl game in LSU history. There's no question about it. I keep forgetting that they actually got a game Saturday.
And it's like, it's like a tale of 2 years, because last year it was a little exciting. I won't lie.
It was still the
Texas Bowl is the Texas Bowl at the end of the day, but then you had Garrett Nussmeier coming back, confirmed, and you had a lot of returns.
Well, I bet he wishes he could do that again.
Yeah, right.
I don't know, man. He's kind of disappeared. It's kind of, you know.
No, I know. I mean, he gave his.
Oh, I see what you meant.
Yeah, I'm thinking he may have wished he would have gone pro last year. But, you know, he had the same situation when Kelly replaced Orgeron after the 21 season, and that bowl wasn't exactly much really anticipated. But it was early still in the NIL age, and now some of the bowls are just dying, particularly when you have a coaching change, because, you know, the coaches aren't going to coach in it. So, but, you know, I'm still going to watch it. I have to watch it. Got to write about it. But it is going to be interesting to see, you know, who they play. I mean, who they put on the offensive line. You know, Harlan Berry, I'm sure, will play. But just so you'll know, the LSU players who are definitely not playing.
Wait, is Harlan Berry going to play on the offensive line?
I'm wondering who is going to play on the offensive line and try to block for Harlan Berry. Maybe Harlan Berry shouldn't play, but the players definitely not playing in the bowl game are Garrett Nussmeier, Mansoor Delane, Whit Weeks, Harold Perkins, Aaron Anderson, Josh Thompson, Colin Hurley, Caleb Jackson, Jelani Watkins. They entered the portal. Kylan Billiott, Ashton Stamps, and Wallace Foster. Not sure on Jack Pyburn.
No, he's out.
And A.J. Halsey.
Who has not practiced all week.
Okay, so Pyburn and Halsey likely not to play. Chris Hilton is going to play, though. And then Cohen Echols, who just entered the portal, he may play. He's been practicing all week. And Carius Kern may also play in the game.
Yeah, I think Jock Doucet confirmed that Cohen Echols will play this weekend.
Why?
Well, he's been practicing all week, and maybe he wants to show himself to portal teams that could pick him, is what it is.
They're not going to be watching that game.
Sure they will. They can watch tape. They can watch tape. All right. Well, hey, Merry Christmas, everybody, and we'll be back next week on Tiger Rag Radio.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.